I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self Build Magazine.
Barry McCarron, who is an Instagrammer, I suppose, and he's mostly the chairman of the Passive House Association of Ireland.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Super. Listen, so chairperson of the Passive House Association of Ireland, you've also just recently extensively renovated your own bungalow. So you've lots of tips and advice to share to others with an actual practical example. But so I suppose the thing to start off with is probably your own project and what you did and your guiding principles for that. Obviously, you have your own angle with the whole Passive House thing, but just in general terms.
Yeah, well, for us, the project was really, if you go back to the lean years of the Celtic Tiger and the recession, we were able to get this home at reasonable money. So then in the 10 years or so that we were here living in this house, you know, we had dealt with all the shortcomings of the house, you know, cold kitchen with a stove in one of the living rooms, a really hot space. So having been in that environment for the 6 or 7 years, it was clear to us that, you know, we were either going to build a new build on our family farm, which isn't too far away from here, or, you know, slowly but surely, we came to the realization that we would probably retrofit where we are. Because it would be cheaper than a new build. So that's what we did. We just went after then doing this retrofit to the best that we could do it. And that was really the International Passive House Standard for retrofit, which is called Enerfit. So that was it, really. And that's we're just finished just over a year ago. And we're in the house now, coming up on, just short of 3 months. So everything to date seems to be going swimmingly, and it seems to be doing exactly like it said in the tin and all the rest. So
excellent. So this whole Enerfit system, so it's a fabric first approach, I guess. What are just the headline? We don't have to go into anything technical, but just the headline details of what you did to actually retrofit your own bungalow.
So ours is the same as most other retrofits that are a deep retrofit now, and also in line with the Passive House Standard. So very simply, it's just five principles. Those are really good U values, floor, wall, roof. When you're doing that, you take care with the junctions and the details. So we're really looking at limiting thermal bridging with the details. That's the second principle. The third would be high performance windows in the form of triple glazed windows. And then principle four and principle five would be you make the building as airtight as possible to facilitate mechanical heat recovery ventilation. And that was it.
Okay. Yeah. And airtightness, can you explain a bit more about what that actually is? I suppose insulation, we all kind of have an idea of insulation's a bit like a coat you put on the house to keep the heat in. And the U value calculates basically how good the coat is, as the Gatog rating almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the wall. But the airtightness, can you explain a little bit? Because that's an extra layer, I suppose, that's also very important.
Yeah, exactly. So airtightness is really a very misunderstood topic with a lot of people, but it's really the golden rule of thumb is you make the building airtight so you can ventilate. And a good analogy to bring that home to most people, and a reason also not to be nervous about making a building as airtight as possible, is it's the same in your car, be it the hot weather of the summer or the cold weather that there is in the winter. You know, your car will recover heat from the engine and give it to you in the cockpit. If you had the four windows of the car down and you're driving along 60 miles an hour, that isn't worth a damn. And in the summertime, it's air conditioning that's in around you. And again, if you had the four windows down, the air conditioning wouldn't be working too well. So it's really around that. And now that I've mentioned windows, you can open windows in a passive house as well. That's another myth that pops up time and time and time again with all of this. So hopefully that analogy sort of explains it. For us on the project, we were very fortunate. For years I've been involved in the whole passive house business, and it's been for a lot of time tapes and membranes would follow the timber elements of the building, and then the other part would normally be you know, the plaster layers, and you're relying on the tradesmen and a bit of sequencing and project management. But what has happened in the last, say, 2 to 3 years in the Irish market is we've had the influx of airtightness paints, which are very, very, very helpful and allow homeowners to even do it. And on our project, we did have some professional expertise. Our builder did do a bit of it as well. And I suppose, fortunate enough for us, we were able to do some of it as well, where you're brushing on the paint in various areas. And it's dummy proof, really.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that's the whole thing, is you're creating this barrier, really. It's making the insulation work better. Obviously, you can open your windows and all that. It is necessary to get to the passive house standard, then, isn't it? The airtightness.
To your point there about that, you know, it's like buying a really good North Face jacket, having really good U values. And then going for a hike up the Moor Mountains, but not having any socks or a hat on or anything. You know, airtightness is just a bit that makes that all work and makes the insulation perform as it should. And without that, you're totally open to the elements and totally open to, you know, the vagrancies of the building, you know, how well it's built and various other factors.
And that's the perfect. So in terms of insulation, let's say, what are the different types, because the topics, but the insulation airtightness, what are the just headline different types of insulation for people who are new to this game?
So again, you've got a very well understood market for anybody here that's coming to it. The family of insulations, I suppose, follow largely you know the quilt insulations that we would be familiar with, going back to whenever I was a child. You have the fiberglass insulations that would be in your roof, with that as well. Then you also have a new one there, Rockwool, which is actually one of the sponsors of this session. And then you move much into then the boards, and then within the different boards of insulations, you have a EPS, which is like the little styrofoam bowl balls that you would get when you open, say, a child's toys, very similar to that. That's what we used on our external wall insulation system. And then you've a whole raft, I'm not mentioning all the various companies, but you have them PIR insulations. They're the insulations that are sort of yellow in colour or with a green tinge that you would see in between two foil back layers. And again, all of these, as we're talking, even The conductivities of these materials are improving all the time, as is the embodied carbon of them as well, to be fair. And then the last area of insulations that is growing in terms of demand is the natural ventilations. So they include wood fiber, hemp, cellulose, different products like that. And we've used some of those in our project as well. And there's a real demand, as I said, growing around those, being driven by policy around embodied carbon, really.
So what did you put then? You said you did external wall insulation for your own build. That's a bit more expensive than dry lining internally or trying to pump cavities. What was the thinking behind your own house?
When you use external wall insulation, you do get a couple of benefits. One is you get to change the outside look of the building because you get to get a new render. In a lot of cases with a retrofit, you'd be doing that anyway. So there's a trade-off in cost. If you're taking a new plastered layer and everything that you were going to be doing, you can deduct that from the cost of the external wall insulation. There's also very generous grants for those at the moment. We were able to avail of the external wall insulation grant, which was worth 8,000 for our project. And as I said, the other thing that's really good is it's a wrap, essentially. So you deal with an awful lot of these thermal bridges. And earlier on, I highlighted the five principles of a really good retrofit or deep retrofit. And with that, all of those thermal bridges are almost certainly dealt with. There's a few others that you might have to deal with, but by and large, the vast majority of them is dealt with. And then for us, that was the external wall insulation system. That's what the walls were. We've a really good U value, just over 0.11, which is very good. And then in our roof space, we went for a very different sort of build-up, one that wouldn't be that common here, but particularly in the northwest here in Monaghan, northeast. It would be we had a 35 mil Gutex, which is wood fiber insulation, and then the 220 rafter, which is the depth of a rafter for people who don't know. We got that pumped with recycled newspaper, and there was over 3 tons of recycled newspaper that went into that roof. And the equivalent weight of the roof, if it had have been a cut PIR with a tenon saw and then stuffed in, that would have been less than a ton. So the roof is 3 times heavier with this natural insulation. It's cost comparable, it's about the same cost, and we're really happy with the outcome as well. My reason for going for that wasn't actually embodied carbon or anything like that. It was to do with a thing called decrement delay. And I don't want to be too technical, but it's really about keeping the overheating out of the room and roof situation. If the roof is heavier and thicker, then it stops the room from heating, overheating as well. So that was the main reason for going with those
Right.
materials.
And cost-wise, it was the same for the same U value for between
More or
PIR
less,
and
yeah.
yeah, more or less. Okay.
Almost no increase in comparative between the two.
Yeah. So the cellulose. So then, did you use it in the floors as well, or did you do anything with the floors?
So the floor, yeah. So again, just back to, I already mentioned the family of insulations, board insulations that we talked about with the PIR coils. We had 2 layers of those to make up 180 millimeters of insulation that went into the floor, which is quite a depth. And if you look at the Instagram page, whenever we started the demolition, I remember doing a post which the insulation that was in the floor was only about the thickness of a curly whirly. Just before the session there, I was scrolling through some of the old photographs that are on the Instagram page, and in that actual photograph, the grout for the tiles is thicker than the insulation. So we went from that to 180, which is a very, very thick amount of insulation, and we've an excellent U value then. And then that supports the whole idea of doing underfloor heating with a heat pump and everything. And even now, even though it's summertime, even walking around your bare feet, the tiles aren't cold. They're tactile and they're sort of the same temperature as the room, and the underfloor heating hasn't even been on yet. So look forward to the winter and all.
So you can get all your stats out. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
well, it
the it
looks like
was
winter at the moment.
it does feel like winter. So it was a solid floor then. It wasn't a suspended floor, obviously, that what you had there to work with.
But another interesting comment on that is that we went with a sand cement, very deliberate sand cement screed, and we made it 100 mil thick. And I remember some of the construction team on site going, really why. And the whole idea there was that if we beefed up the floor screed with the underfloor heating in it, the thicker the screed and the heavier material it is, i.e. the sand cement, there is other types of screeds that you can get that are lighter. The heavier screed, the thicker screed would hold the heat longer. So if you were looking at a bar chart of this, it would be smoother sort of humps and downs rather than up, down, up, down, up, down. So it would hold the heat for longer. That was really the approach with that as well.
And but less responsive, that's kind of the trade-off. But if you keep it on all the time, it just can regulate itself then. Isn't that the idea? Not to
Oh, totally.
need
The whole idea,
responsiveness.
yeah. The whole idea of a heat pump is to, it's like the turtle and the hare. It sort of slow and steady wins the race, sort of thing. Yeah.
So then, so with the insulation types, basically, isn't it like my understanding of it is when you have the kind of thicker insulation, it tends to be cheaper because the actual inherent insulation value of it is less good. So you kind of it's kind of a you're always kind of balancing, the price with what insulation value you're getting for it. So
Correct.
are they all kind of equivalent cost wise at the end of the day? Is that fair to
Yeah.
say, or is there still a scale?
With the
Apart from
floor
the
insulation.
natural stuff, with let's say the your standard PIR, the rigid board ones, with versus let's say the EPS, which would be
Yeah.
thicker for the same insulation value, versus let's say mineral wool.
Yeah,
It,
there's a
I,
rough rule of thumb is you're right. There isn't a huge deal because the trade-off is that with say EPS insulation that doesn't have as good a conductivity as PIR, you have to have a bigger thickness. Therefore,
More
it sort of
product,
does,
so
yeah,
more
more
cost.
permanent.
So at the end of the day, really, it is about the application more than anything. It's not so much cost, isn't it, for insulation?
Yeah, correct. Correct and right, and then on site, it's all about attention to detail. It's all about, and then for people that are tuning in today and they're the homeowner, it is those little things that you might think, oh, I'm not bothered doing that. All those little things add up and make the difference, and that's really what the Passive House standard is all about as well. It's just really attention to detail and being very, very particular about various little details, and that. That's the thing that closes this performance gap that we talk about. I had various meetings on Monday, and there is, a thing at the moment where, some academic research that's out there within Ireland that's saying that some A1 rated houses have as much as a 38% performance gap. And the reason for that is really this attention to detail type thing that we're talking about,
So insulation continuity, air tightness being everywhere, and everything being sealed up properly then.
That's right, and again, I did answer some questions that came in following one of the posts there as well. For us, we were going after the Passive House thing, but having just done a project and hadn't completed it, and be in a final account stage, I did research before the project. How much is it going to cost? And again, I knew how much I hoped to do it for, and I knew how much in reality it would probably come at me, and. It's very hard to get away from the figure of €2,000 a meter squared, and for us that brings us in at around just over 360,000, and to be fair, that is where we've come in, and that is what the guide price was from the Royal Institute of Architects of Ireland, the RAAI. That was the price that they had as well for outside of Dublin. So, by and large, I'm really, really, really happy with that in terms of costs, because I have, through the Passive House methodology, a house that I know is going to perform and all the rest for that investment. And we've done some rough analysis with the PHPP. And if you can, consider a mortgage period this 28 years for us, we're very confident that if you were to compare leaving the house as is, which maybe isn't that unre probably would have changed it, but probably cosmetically we mightn't have structurally changed it or changed the plumbing and all of that. The difference over the 28 years is going to be over 100,000. So there's 100,000 savings projected against, the 360,000 we spent. So therefore, for us, it sort of adds up,
Yeah, but still 360 sounds high. You redid everything then. Did you get a new kitchen and all of that? Like, what does
That's
that
the full
include?
finish.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
Yeah, it's not the
everything.
builder
So
finish,
it's,
right? The full finish, yeah.
yeah, so it is the cost. Like, that sounds like a new build, really, doesn't it? It's when you were saying
Yep.
you figured that with a new build, you'd be with a renovation or renovating the bungalow, you'd
Well,
be a bit
we
cheaper
avoided
than.
all. We've sorry, Ashley. Yeah, we avoided all the costs of connection charges. We were away from a lot of the planning requirements as well. No foundations, no groundworks, anything like that. When we sort of were finishing off here, we already had our garden and everything. There's a lot in all of that as well. Sewer connections, everything was there as well. So all
Yeah.
those. When I did a rough sort of cost to build up on the farm, I don't believe I would have got out of it for less than half a million.
Right, okay. So definitely better value.
Yeah, I think so.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So just in terms of insulation solutions for different house types, let's say, is it fair to say that generally a solid, let's say an older house that would have a solid wall would be better suited for external wall insulation? And then kind of there'd be, if you have a cavity of a certain amount, pumping beads makes more sense. And then dry lining internally is another option for the walls. So which kind of houses are suited for? I know it is really a case by case basis where you do have to get someone in to do
Yeah.
that, but just in kind of to get an idea of what the options
But yeah,
are.
so to talk about insulation for various house types, and again, you do get asked from friends and family and stuff all the time around this, and there is no rule of thumb per se that you can give everybody to take away, because there is such differences. And almost nearly, if somebody even describes a house type to you and then you go to that house type, there's probably something else very unique there that is affecting that. But if a house is really old, like say older than the 1950s, a lot of the natural materials or insulation materials that I've mentioned today are probably very, applicable to that type of building in a lot of cases, particularly if it is, detached and of a heritage nature in terms of Georgian styles and different things. But then moving on from the 1950s onwards, again, when it comes to external wall insulation, the rule of thumb from the Institute in Germany would always be, insulate on the outside. You move the dew point away from the inside. Therefore, in terms of mold, condensation, various factors like that, you're, I suppose, erring on the safer side there all the time. Now, external wall insulation is growing in Ireland as a thing. I'm glad to see that. But primarily, that's the one that, I'd be an advocate for. And then everything has its place, and dry lining has its place as well in various situations as well. But again, a degree of caution is needed around that, particularly then when it's an older building or a solid wall. So yeah, hopefully that answers that
Yeah,
too, to you.
definitely. And then in terms of a cost optimal amount of insulation, after a certain amount of insulation, there's no point in going, well, the more you put insulation, the more it insulates, it's supposed to sound obvious, but actually after a certain amount, The money you'd put in to put more insulation, you wouldn't really get back in less heating bills and all that. So what's kind of...
So there is a sweet spot. So really that you're trying to get all U values below 0.15 is the golden figure. In some cases, you know, 0.10 is really the limit. I would say going anything below that, which some people do, it isn't cost effective at all. So really, you know, in between a new value of 0.15 and 0.10 is the sweet spot there. And that means, you know, you wouldn't really expect in Ireland, which is known as a cool temperate climate, to be having insulation levels much greater than 150 to 200. Once you go past 200, that is not cost effective, I would say, particularly with EPS insulation or anything like that. When it comes to, again, choice of heating systems and stuff, if you're looking for to put in a heat pump, an air-to-water heat pump, and again, there's a lot of conversation, particularly in this whole Instagram space of home builders, a lot of discussions, a lot of people have asked questions over the last year about that as well. If you're looking to bring into play one of those types of heating technologies, the better you make the fabric, the better that will perform. An analogy that I would use all the time around this is like your fridge. Your fridge is a heat pump. It's just it's in reverse. And the fabric of your fridge is very clear and understandable to everybody. It is a door that's full of insulation. The sides of the fridge, the roof, the floor of the fridge, they're all full of insulation. And you have an airtight seal on the door. That sounds familiar?
Yeah.
It probably does. So therefore, that's suitable for an air-to-water heat pump. But if your fabric isn't of that scale and you're not doing the whole air tightness, then it's completely okay to go with even an oil boiler in many cases, because you're going to use much, much less oil with still going with, you know, average levels of insulation, average levels of air tightness. You're still going to have a much, much improved situation. Now, obviously, I'd advocate everybody to go as far as they can. But of course, cost is a thing as well for everybody, and you have to cut your cloth to suit. So hopefully that makes a degree of sense as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And maybe we should define what a U value is, because we're so used to these terms. But just to explain, you know, because it's about the layers, isn't it? Because there's
you started very well earlier by talking about a TOG value for a duvet. It's very similar. It's a way of measuring the heat loss through an element, be it in a building, a floor, a wall, a roof. So the figure is, in some ways, that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
It's how much heat loss is lost. So the lower the figure, the better the U value.
Yeah, but ironically, then because you have to add up all the layers, so you add up the plaster, the insulation does most of the work, obviously, to get a good U value. But like every single bit of layer adds up. But that measure, what is it, thermal resistance or something for insulation? The higher the number, the better it is, isn't it? It's inverse.
Oh,
it's a bit counterintuitive.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the opposite. So just to make sure, you know what figure.
That's right. What Astrid's saying is just the various layers all add up. But when you were saying about the various layers all adding up, the U value that you get is a desktop figure. It's a figure that's written down on paper. There's no real technology. Well, there is technology out there to do like a bleep test, you know, where you put the thing on your chest, and you can do an inside and an outside of that to get a real U value in practice. But it's very, very rare. It's really the academics that have that technology. But this care and attention that I spoke about earlier, that's the difference between translating your desktop U value figure, the one that you're hoping to get that's done on a piece of paper, to reality. So it's you can't afford to have gaps or any sort of horror stories or anything mad going on. You need the layers to be done as they're designed.
Have you come across a lot of projects like that actually didn't, like, give us a few horror stories?
They're everywhere. I'd worry about The mass building market's the one that's probably, fair to give a hit to. Again, even when you have a good developer, a good contractor, they're at the mercy of their staff, and the execution on site of various things. Now, there's a number of factors that are hard and a challenge and all the time. The weather, and look at the weather this last month, no better example. But the insulation stuff, it really does come down. But when it comes to this homeowner area and self-build, that's the challenge, or that's maybe the opportunity here for all of us that are in this space, around being able to tackle that yourself. And there's lots of good people within the sector given short CPD courses to, you don't have to be a construction professional to go along and learn really good nuggets around what to do and what to look out for on site. But in terms of those horror stories as well, it's really about avoiding. The one that keeps rattling me at the moment is the heat pumps. And it's not that there's anything wrong with air to water heat pumps. It's this thing of, like, you go to a wedding and somebody comes up to you and they're like, "Barry, what story is it? You're into all this. What's the story with these heat pumps? I have an electricity bill and it's colossal from I got the heat pump." And then you're like, "What are you drinking?" And then it's really just about breaking the bad news that probably various parts of the fabric of the building are just simply not performing, and it's about, has that got away? Probably in some instances, but is there some stuff you can do? Yeah, there always is something that you can do, depending. So it's really about that. So for me, that's the horror story that's ongoing at the moment.
Yeah, because how do you identify that? Do you use your bleep testing, or what would you do to actually find out what the problem is in the house?
The air tightness test is a real good one. And my experience, maybe, of teaching the Passive House Tradesperson's course and different things over the years has really helped me see this, where builders are actually very funny. They come in and they start the course, and they maybe argue with you for the first morning up until lunchtime, and then they have a bit of a group discussion, and then they come back and they're like, "You're on to something there," or the whole thing mood starts to change, and then by the end, they're very, very good builders at then turning around and giving you solutions to problems. But some of them then that have stayed on that journey, and have stayed in contact with me, what you've seen then is that there's real pride in their work. But the blower door test, a lot of them see that as a stamp of approval. So the lower that they can get the house in terms of air tightness, that is an indicator of the quality of construction. And how well it's done. And for I was very proud in our job that, the first air tightness test came in at 0.69. I was proud of our own contribution to that, but for the builder that hadn't done it before, and for the various other people that were involved in the project, that was really good. And then our second air tightness test, we got down to 0.53, which is, more than enough for Passive House Enerfit. In fact, we're on the cusp of maybe being a full Passive House. So it can be done. That's a team of people that came to this and had no experience of building to that level of air tightness before and were able to do it. So, I mean, there it is.
You need the buy-in, though, as you say. That's what it is. That's what it's about, isn't it?
It is. It probably is. The buy-in is in. And then, as I said at the very start, the paints are a great get out of jail card in terms of difficult details and everything. That really, really helps now. You might see in some of the posts, like I'm going around with a leaf blower, just getting dust out of the way, just at that connection between the floor at subfloor level and the walls, and really you just have to, sorry for using Monaghan language here, you just have to slap the paint in all around. You can be as messy as you want. It's like blue Peter or PVA glue everywhere. Just go with it, and you can't do it wrong. And that was one of the most awkward details forever and ever. It couldn't be got right until the paints came,
Excellent. Super. Was there anything else that we didn't cover about insulation and air tightness that people need to know about, that we ran through quite a few bits there?
Yeah, probably have. I suppose I maybe just alluded to it a wee moment ago. Really and truly, as well, in a masonry build construction, that this is sort of the rule of thumb I would always say, your air tightness layer is the plaster. So like the sand cement screed that's put on in the blocks, and then the finished plaster, that is your airtight layer. So if and I've been out before doing this with my work, if you go out and you do a blower door test, the main place where you see leakage all the time is of course the windows, sometimes where the conduit is, you know, with the sockets, you always find that as well. But the number one is at the skirting board. And if you ever knock off a skirting board, what everybody here would be able to close their eyes and visualize right now is an uneven layer of plaster and then the exposed block. And that is exactly what the skirting board is there to do, is to cover that. And you would not believe how porous or how unairtight a block is. In fact, up in Enniskillen where we have in the college, we actually cover it in fairy liquid and we turn on the fan and it's like a bubble factory, the amount of air that comes through a block. So really it's those three places in a build. It's and it's all to do with the plaster, just getting that layer covering the block work. And if that's done, you're airtight with that detail. So I suppose just that you asked me, Astrid, about, you know, what else covering airtightness. That's it. Masonry is plaster, and then where you've timber elements or if you've a timber frame building, it's all the tapes and membranes. That's where they come into play. So typically, again, thinking of most Irish construction now, and I am from a timber frame background, it's only in the roof part where you'd really be getting into the tapes and membranes, with the exception of the windows. But in a timber frame, then it's all membranes and tapes.
Okay. So if you were to build that new house, what building method would you go for to make your life easy? I know that's probably a question you can't answer, but
I would answer it very quickly. I think a number of things that I would look at, what I almost certainly would not do is build cavity construction. No way at all would I entertain that for a second. Block on its flat with external wall insulation could be very cost effective. There is suppliers in the Irish market now that have an aerated concrete block, which is very similar to having a block on its flat. You know, in Europe they call it monolithic construction, so one layer wall with external wall insulation. And again, the skill level comes way down there. You can't really mess that up. And then the other one that I would look at would be timber frame and ICF as well, because of their values. Timber frame I would look at because of the embodied carbon aspect of everything else. When it comes to looking at ICF construction, while the concrete is very bad in terms of embodied carbon, what it does give you is the ICF gives you that thermal bridge free situation, but it also gives you an inherent airtightness with poured concrete. So you know you're off to a winner there, and the speed of construction as well.
And why not cavity wall then?
It's just it takes too slow. It's too slow. It's too cumbersome. There's a lot of detail for me in it, that you have to get right, and a lot of things you have to look out for all the way through. And I'd honestly believe, I'd predict this, that, you know, 10 years from now, I don't think at all it'll be the dominant form of construction. I think we'll have moved on from that.
You heard it
here first.
If
it's not already happened.
Yeah. Oh no, it's not yet, I don't think. But I think people are moving away. There is a lot of detail for, like, all this, what do they call them, snots that get in, like the bits of, like, you need to keep the cavity clean and all that kind of stuff. It's not really easy to do.
That's very hard.
Yeah. Okie dokes. Well, thanks so much, Barry. Really appreciate it. And your Instagram is Bungalow Retrofit, isn't it?
Bungalow_retrofit, yeah.
Bungalow_retrofit. That's great. Loads of details on that. It's a super page. That's great. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Perfect. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus Journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Thank you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.